When the offense is going through something like this, how do you decide when it's right to be patient and when it's right to mix things up a little bit?
Well, I mean, yesterday I mix it up a little bit. You just got to stay consistent. You got to stay positive with the guy. There's a lot of good hitters there. And it's just a bad stretch. You got to continue to trust the players there. They're really good. And continue to work with them.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, April the 12th, 2026. Of course, I'm Yelts Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. And come join me at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free. Updates on the show. Interact with me. You can even become a premium subscriber. All at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Well, that sucked. I know I'm chuckling here and laughing, but it's no laughing matter. Mets lose three straight to Oakland, Sacramento, Las Vegas. Just the A's ball club. It's almost like a soccer club at this point. I should say a European football club. Mets lose three straight. And what's unfathomable, really, is when I came to you with one of my extra inning shorts after the big walk-off by Ronnie Mauricio earlier in the week, who would have thought that the Mets would lose five in a row, 1-5 homestand, 7-9 on the year, and now heading to a mini West Coast trip, the Dodgers. Maybe seeing old friend Edwin Diaz, who seems to be getting benched early because of low velocity. Wrigley Field, a struggling Cubs club, similar to them. So not the best time to go on what is really a tough road trip before they come back home and the schedule gets a little bit better. But at this point, with the way the Mets are hitting, I don't think it really matters who they play. It's going to come down to execution. But we do have a lot to talk about, and it's going to be a big two-part show because in the second half of the show, we released on Friday our good friend, Talking Mets special contributor, David Mills, release the top positional player prospects only as the Talking Mets podcast can do. We released that on Friday. Had a couple of comments on that in the chat room, so we'll get to some of your comments on that. And Dave and I will be talking about the Mets positional players, which is pretty appropriate after this weekend where, at the big league level, much of the component players and the homegrown players, shall we say, struggled. So is there help on the horizon? What does the Mets' positional prospects look like? We were very bullish and excited about the pitchers when we talked about them in late March. Now we get a chance in part two later in the show to do the positional players. But let's start with the task at hand. And I can't help myself. I'm sorry, I can't help myself, especially when I'm watching the ball game on a beautiful early spring Sunday. And I got the iPhone in front of me and the X account, and I just can't help myself. I said last week I violated my own credo, which is you have this toxic portion of the fan base that you're never going to sell on anything. They're just going to be negative no matter what direction the team goes. The only time they're positive is when they're quiet, is when the team is winning. And then the minute something bad goes along, they pop their heads up. And unfortunately, I think it's a big chunk of the social media crowd here on X, and then you have the talk radio component, which is, I think, a lot of what you see for fans at Citi Field, and the fans rightfully frustrated, booing the Mets off the field after the three-game sweep. And I mean, look, I think the big weekend dialogue, or it was in front of you here at Citi Field, and then out in LA, you saw Brandon Nimmo have a couple of big hits against the Dodgers. But I think it's fair for everybody, as we now get through the first 15, 16 games of the season, as April now is halfway over, and before you know it'll be May 1st. And look, before you know it, in 2 weeks, you're halfway through that first marker, halfway to that first marker of, hey, getting to know this team and what's this team all about. And right now, it's a mixed bag. At best, it's a mixed bag. I think there's a lot of things that we still need to learn, and I know that that's not what fans want to hear, because everybody thinks they know everybody about this team 15, 16 games in, and you don't, because you just cracked the cellophane off this thing. And to have the New York Post put "it's getting late early" headline just tells you the state of media and how you sell papers or digital papers or whatever you you do these days in mainstream media. But you know, when you think about what's been running around social media about, you see McNeil have a nice series, playing a good second base, spraying the ball around the yard at Citi Field, reminiscent of his heyday in 2019 and when he won the batting title in 2022. And then you see Nimmo off to a hot start out in L.A. And I know Pete has not gotten on track in Baltimore, but I'm sure he'll go through a stretch where he'll hit, you know, 10 home runs in a month, hit a salami here and drive in a billion runs, and you'll hear about it then. And I know Diaz's velocity's down and he blew a save. We've seen that movie play out early in the year. I'm sure, unless he's hurt, Diaz will, once the bell rings in October, be Diaz. He'll give you some sweatiness, but he'll be Diaz, and he's going to be tough to hit. And who knows? It's possible he gets himself on track this week against the Mets. I mean, you could see the way things are going, that's the way it would be going. But I think that ultimately the success of this offense, let's just talk about the offense, which is where the struggles are. Three shutouts through the first 16 games, scored six runs the whole series. Shutout on Friday, shutout on Sunday, six runs yesterday. And I've said this over and over again, and I'm going to be a broken record with this, and if you don't like it, that's too bad. Because this is really one of the first things I'm pretty sure about when it comes to the 2026 Mets. If the 2026 Mets offense is going to fail this year, it's going to be because of the component and young players. And I'll say more on the young players, because I have a benchmark of success with Bo Bichette. Bo Bichette is not going to hit 620 OPS. Francisco Lindor is not going to spend the entire season hitting 160. He's not. Got a couple hits today. Okay, so he's starting to percolate a little bit. All right, and not having Soto in the lineup, that matters. I mean, you don't have a top five run creator in the whole freaking sport, and you lose him in the lineup. And I know everybody got intoxicated a week ago because they scored a bunch of runs in San Francisco. That doesn't happen. They were fortunate on Saturday night a week ago because the defense let down Roop. So he's going to be okay. And Polanco has enough of a history where now the Achilles is a problem, the bursitis, that could, anytime you have your lower half impacted, that could impact your bat. But let's assume he could play through it, because he is. He should be okay, and you'll get pretty much your 750 OPS, the back of the baseball card. And I think at the end of the day, he and Nimmo offensively will probably wash out before the year is out. What this season is going to be all about, when you take away the four core guys, the your hub of your offense, Soto, Bichette, Lindor, Polanco, those are the hub. It's going to be about, and largely I'll even put Robert Jr. in there. It's going to be because he's a young player that's come over from Chicago, and he's looking to take his career and put his career into what it should be here, and either get signed to a big contract in the next couple of years or kind of fizzle into being that guy that bounces around and maybe becomes a part-time player or a starter on a bad club. What it's going to come down to is Alvarez, Vientos, Beatty, Bench, Robert Jr. That's what it's going to come down to. And so far, through the first 2.5 weeks of the season, I think Alvarez has done his part, but Alvarez has also been up and down consistently, consistencies. And sometimes in a big spot, he gets a little long. Vientos has not been great. He's been streaky. He had a little bit of a series there in San Francisco. Beatty's been bad. And Benj has been bad. And we're not even sure Benj is a big leaguer yet. You know, and there'll be a big part of the conversation we have with Dave when he comes on in the second half of the show, in part two, is Benj a big leaguer? Because I could tell you, talking to Dave offline, our good friend David Mills, Talking Mets contributor, special contributor, he all the way back into the, pretty much throughout the offseason, told me, no, he should be in AAA at least a good part of the season, even though I disagreed because I said, well, if David Stearns feels he's ready and he had that college experience, why? That's going to be what decides it. You want to throw Mauricio in there? Mauricio somehow, because of an injury or because they finally say, hey, enough is enough, let me get him some time. I guess it would be at second, unless they, and I don't think they would move with Simeon hit his glove. I mean, right now, hit the ball a little bit better today. Simeon's not going anywhere. Notice I'd even bring up Simeon because he's not a core offensive player. He's a component guy down the line who's there for his glove. If you're going to expect Simeon to be the, or anywhere near the hitter he was in his heyday with Toronto, then you're playing old Mets Wilpon baseball. They didn't bring him there to be that. So when you look at that, that's what this season's about. And let's also face it, the bell is rung where it's time. Okay, I'm done waiting. That's the thing. If you want to boo or get angry, it's not at Lindor. It's not at Polanco or Simeon. It's not about looking at McNeil and Nimmo and what they're doing elsewhere and wondering if they kept the band together, what would have happened? Because you just don't know. You can't judge all these guys by 50 games. Which, by the way, McNeil's hitting a .150 before this week when he came to New York and they ran through Yankee Stadium and Citi Field, the A's. We've been talking about Brett Beatty since 2022, August of 2022. We've been talking about Vientos since August of 2022. We've been talking about Alvarez almost around the same amount of time. They've been up, they've been down. Mauricio's been in this organization for a long time, too. We've had these discussions on this show in different ways, shape, and forms. One of them has to go. They have too much duplication. They have a ton of talent, but at some point, talent has to produce, and it has to be consistent. Now, Vientos, to me, is probably a guy that's got to hit down in the lineup, and he's a streak hitter. And Beatty was a guy that you were hoping was going to replace McNeil and be closer to what you got at Nimmo offensively than McNeil and play around the field and give him credit. He's playing right field. He's playing third base. He's played second base. I mean, he's played more defense than I could ever imagine since he got brought up here. But at this point, coming into today's game, Beatty's got a 582 OPS. He's back to the same offensive problems, no power, weak groundouts that we've seen time and time again. Because to me, the actual positiveness of what I've seen through 16 games is that the one thing that undid them, really undid them last year, and why they didn't make the postseason was the pitching, the starting pitching. And it's been pretty good. Yeah, Senga did his thing yesterday where he's inconsistent. By the way, didn't I tell you in the non-predictions that that was going to be part of who he was? And yeah, Freddy Peralta may only be a 5 or 6 inning ace, and McClain may be only able to go 6 innings, and he may throw too many pitches too. And Peterson's a back end of the rotation starter, sure. And you know what, Clay Holmes, can he be that guy that could be the guy in the middle? Can he be your Ron Darling type pitcher and kind of stabilize and provide you a good outing time and time again? Or Rick Reed type of pitcher? You want to pick a name in a generation, pick the name in the generation. Yeah, I think he could. The starting, you know, the rotation's good. I mean, Devin Williams right now, you got to feel better about having Devin Williams than Edwin Diaz. We'll see over the long run. Brazenbaum has been really good. I think he might move up into the leverage situation. Luke Weaver has looked a little bit like the Luke Weaver of the Yankees, inconsistent. At some point, does Kimbrel get big outs? Again, another prediction, non-prediction. Brooks really has looked elite. Tobias Myers, I think you got to be careful. Maybe 2 innings is his max. You got to be careful after 30 pitches, I think. There's a lot of contact there. And who could argue? Sean Manaea, who God rest his soul, Pedro Feliciano, who robbed Sean Manaea and put Pedro Feliciano in his body? I mean, that's what I saw today. I thought I was looking at the late Pedro Feliciano. I thought this was 2006. I thought I was two decades earlier. Now, I don't think he could start and get through a lineup more than once with 88 to 90, but he's locating pitches, throwing off speed. Now, it's a coldish day at Citi Field. Like, not maybe not cold, but Citi Field's not going to be a hitter's ballpark for a while. Let me see him on the road against the tough offense, guys who just aren't going to chase. The A's, a little bit more of a chase ball club, a little bit. But you got to feel good because, to me, there's hope. As long as the pitching continues to do its thing, outside of that disaster on Saturday with Senga, and then they came back and the bullpen spit the bit. that's a positive, because as long as you pitch and you're in ball games, you got to think the offense is going to come around. However, if the component young homegrown players stink or are not big league ready, this team has a problem. And it's not a problem that can be booed away by the fans or traded away or yelled at to Cohen. You cannot, I don't care how big your payroll is, and stop with the payroll, when you have stars making $40 million, $35 million, if you want to have big elite, top 10, top 15, at any type of position on the field, your payroll is going to have to be $300 million or more, unless you develop them and hold their salary down early in their career. Okay? It's not impressive to have a $300 million payroll when two guys are making 85 of it. You add Bichette, that's 120. 30-year payrolls in three guys. You put in Polanco, that's 140. You put in Devin Williams, that's 155. Half of your payroll is already five guys. So stop with the payroll. Stop. Having a $300 million payroll, that gets you in the game. That doesn't guarantee you anything. You're lucky you have what you have with Cohen, because if you didn't, this would be up, you knows what's creek without a paddle. Because I'm not so sure they have the positional player talent right now. There's a lot of questions about it. Okay? There's a lot of questions. So that's what this is all about. You should feel good about the pitching. There's going to be the days when, hey, Senga's going to be Senga, and Peterson's a fifth starter, and McClain and Peralta are probably not always going to go deep. The glue guy is going to be Holmes. As far as a sixth starter, can Manaea be that? Probably not. We'll see what Tong and Christian Scott have up their sleeve down in AAA. As the season goes on, I think that they're a good bet to eventually possibly be taking a start on a doubleheader, or when you want to maybe give Senga an extra day or a blow. You know, we'll see. We'll see about that. And I guess if we, you know, watch Senga, I didn't even get into the fact that what Senga pitched on Sunday, but it wasn't even on, I actually got the extra day because of the day off. And the bullpen, the shuttling, it drives me crazy. You're already starting that with Garcia and Dickie Lovelady and Kimbrel, who I knew would eventually make his way up north, made his way up north, and Joey Gerber will probably be here about 5 minutes. I hate the shuttling, but guess what? Something's got to give. I mean, give Peralta credit. He actually went and got them into the sixth. I didn't think that was in a chance of having that happen when he had that 25 or 26 pitch, what was it, second or third inning, when he got out of the jam. So that's your concern. I mean, this is the story, guys. Everything else, Lindor's politics, Cohen, whatever nonsense about Mendoza. Do I like the quotes in the postgame? Do I like the blandness? No, I don't. But take it from a guy. Look, you guys get mad at me. I see the comments on X about me not getting on the manager. Okay, they fire the manager tomorrow. Who's going to manage? Kai Correa? Who's going to manage? Buck's not coming back. Forget Terry Collins. You know, Terry Collins, by far, the fan love for Terry Collins is mind-boggling. He blew the World Series. He was a fake tough guy. He wasn't hard on his players. When did he bench anybody? David Wright ran that clubhouse during 2015. The veterans, the Bobby Parnells, the Michael Kadires. Come on. You know, you want a guy like, rah, 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 you're about to start hitting, you know, with the media there. And come on. Rah, rah, you know, I'll show them. That's all show for the media to get a chuckle. He was a master at managing the media. Got to give him credit. I think he did it better than any Mets manager in the last 20 years. Maybe Bobby Valentine, but Bobby was controversial. Terry did it in a way where he gave them enough meat and he fed them and he politicked enough to keep them off his back during a time when there wasn't a hell of a lot going on and the expectations were low. You want to bring, first of all, he can't come back because he can't manage in this modern game. And young players see through that. One of the reasons Terry Collins fizzled out is because he couldn't handle young players. He couldn't handle the change of the modern game. Those guys don't exist anymore. The Parcells, the Rileys, Buck, it's over. You're going to get another manager that's going to come in, run a clean clubhouse, communicate roles to players, manage a bullpen, and you know maybe you get somebody who's slightly better with the media. I think Mendoza's fine. He's just going to give you bland quotes. I mean, you might as well have ChatGPT write these post games with these guys. Really, you laughing, but you might as well. Players aren't going to give you anything. This is not the 80s anymore. You want the heyday of Bill Madden with Steinbrenner back headlines and Davey Johnson Mets and Bobby V Mets, you know, talking about Todd Hundley not getting enough sleep or picking a fight with, you know, a star player. It ain't happening anymore. The story here is, are the young players good enough or are they not? And I don't know that after 16 games, but I got to tell you, I don't know, even in the best case scenario right now, if they're consistent, and that's a problem. Now, baseball, even for the best, like a Lindor, like a Soto, they're going to have peaks and valleys. Every baseball player has it. You go and look at splits, you go and look at month by month. Even some of the nice, really good, not saying all-star, but really good, they're going to have good month, down month, two good months, bad month. I mean, they'll have maybe 3 months where most of their production comes into play. That happens. But that, to me, is the story. And if it's trending where they aren't, and now that they've been handed, no more McNeil, Beatty's been handled the job. No more Nimmo. That means more at-bats now, potentially, for Vientos. You know, Benj actually is the guy that's benefiting with no Nimmo. And he's not ready and he has to go back down. Well, that's a problem. So, to me, that's what this is all about. Nothing more, nothing less. And that's what to watch. And if you want to talk about the one thing I'm concerned about, it's those guys. And I'll put Alvarez in. Alvarez is off to a good start. But Alvarez's production has been bottled up in a few at-bats. And he's a catcher, and he's going to sit at least once a week. And it's unfortunate. At some point, that might be a conversation where, because he hasn't been overly impressive with his glove, does he ever become a DH? Just focus on hitting and get yourself a couple of catchers. I mean, it hurts the lineup because, I mean, Torrens is a nice catcher, but he's definitely not the bat of Alvarez, and then you're taking one less bat out of there, and you're putting a catch-and-throw guy behind a plate, which is fine with me, but in a lineup where you have a catch-and-throw, a catch guy at second, and a catch guy behind a plate, you're now you're a little light. The length is not there. But hey, if it helps the pitching staff and prevents runs, that's what run prevention's all about. Benj, I mean, you see a couple of signs there, but you're asking a lot. And this is a tough place to play, and we'll get to that after the break. Look, I pick my fights with the fans. It's always part of it is you having some debate on X, but this is a tough place to play. I think it's the toughest place to play out of all the professional sports teams in this town. The toughest. And that includes the Jets, who have been in a quagmire for a hell of, I mean, you take the Mets resume, the last 30 years and the Jets, it's no comparison. I mean, look at the football Giants. Couple of Super Bowls, and it's been a while since they've been competitive, but even then, it's not like that. I mean, I brought up the Knicks on X. Knicks were going through a really rough stretch back in January. The reason the Knicks probably are not the two seed and don't have home court against the Celtics because of a bad stretch in January. And maybe they would have had a puncher's chance at the number one seed in the conference. They went through, and they lost a horrible game at home to a bad Dallas team. I mean, they went through, never saw the Garden turn toxic, but Mets fans do. I mean, that's a different story. We'll get to that after the break. But the point is this. If you're pining for McNeil and Nimmo and the guys, they went all in on the young players. This is what you guys wanted all along. And this is what has to happen. And I understand what you're saying. Well, the Dodgers don't put Jared Young at third, which, by the way, I don't think Jared Young is all that bad. And lineups in an analytics world, third is kind of like that spot where if you really believe in the analytics mindset, it's the least likely spot to get runners on base. It's almost like an on-base spot. Read up a little bit on lineups on an advanced metric standpoint. But when you look at the Dodgers, they got guys like Dalton Rushing coming off. As a kid, you know, 25 years old, backup catcher, does pretty well. Andy Páez, he's got an OPS plus of 251, young player. I mean, I'm looking at 24-year-old Alex Freeland here, below league average, but you know, in the lineup. So they got their own young players, but they don't have young players up and down that lineup. And you say, well, they don't have, well, you know, when they do, they tend to hit. I mean, think about how Will Smith, the catcher, he's 31 years old, came in and he was a homegrown talent. He produced. You know, the guys, the scrap heap guys like a Max Muncy, they come here and they become stars. So, you know, there's a big difference there. There's a real big difference. But they got their own problems. Their pitching doesn't seem to always stay healthy, and it's a little messy. But, you know, I think that the real debate, the real discussion is not being had. And it won't be had on mainstream. You're only going to have it here. Because we're this is the most rational Mets-centric show you're out there. I'm sorry. I sound arrogant, and I'm not perfect, and I'm not for everybody. But, you know, I'm not a carnival barker, and I'm not giving you only positive. You know, it's funny. Balanced is and rational is looked at as Pollyannish. That's what it's looked at. So, anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get to the mailbag. I'll address my comments about the fan base. I got dived into it a little bit here. And look, this is not going to get any easier. And right now, I think it's actually best for the Mets to be on the road. That's probably a less hostile environment for them. And they're going to LA, which is a tough place to play. And Wrigley Field ain't no picnic either. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Let's hear what the fans have to say. I have some emails, some comments in the chat, tons of stuff on X. And I'm going to start out with X, and this is James on X wrote this. And I'm going to read his tweet. Is it even a tweet anymore? See, I keep a comment on X. See, this whole X versus Twitter, it's the weirdest branding ever. I mean, I remember when before there was PayPal, there was X. That was when Musk started it. I remember I had an X account back then. So it's kind of like Back to the Future, and then it became PayPal, whatever. It doesn't matter. But I used it to sell Knicks tickets, I think, back then, get money for selling Knicks tickets. But anyway, so here's what James wrote. And he wrote something that I think there's a variation of it in different tweets over the last 2 days. When I've criticized the fans and to a certain degree have pled with them, hey, yes, we can hold the team accountable. Yes, we could be angry. Yes, we could be disappointed. But there is a point in time where I have to be quite honest with you. It has become very unenjoyable watching the Mets. I cringe when I open up my Twitter feed on a consistent basis. I cringe when I run into people I know in the real world who are Mets fans. It's not something that I think they're enjoying. And that's a shame because baseball's fun. There's a lot of fun things that come out of baseball. Going to that ballpark is fun. And I think there was this whole idea when Cohen took over, and I've talked about it a billion times, where money was solving every issue that has occurred since the inception of this team. A team that's been around for 65 years. And money just gets you in the game at the top. It doesn't guarantee anything. But anyway, so James writes, I completely disagree with you. That's a huge part of the, there's a huge part of the fan base that has had their hearts broken so many times that when this team falls on its face, we get angry. It's not a case of choosing to be miserable. It's a case of frustration. I understand that. I'm frustrated too. Nothing was more frustrating than watching this team from June 12th, June 15th onward last year. Nothing is more frustrating than rewatching the 2000 World Series. Nothing is more frustrating than rewatching the 2015 World Series. Nothing is more frustrating than the missed opportunity of DeGrom, Harvey, Syndergaard. You wish you had a progressive front office like you have now with those young arms in their early years. Might be different. Nothing's more frustrating than how 2022 ended. Nothing's more frustrating than after 2024, when you think you broke through, how last year went and how this year went. But that doesn't stop me from wanting to enjoy baseball And I think especially in a 6-playoff team per league sport, to get wound up about April 5-game losing streaks, to me is, I don't get it. I don't get it. I just broke out for you throughout the first 25 minutes in this first segment what the real demarcation line is for this Mets team. It's going to be two things this year. That's it. I'm pretty sure about it. Now, I reserve the right to change because our getting to know you phase lasts until Memorial Day. But it's going to be the health of the starting pitching and whether or not what we see with the starting pitching is sustainable. So far, I think it is. And the young players contributing and supporting the core stars. If either of those things come up on the negative side of the line, or significantly on the negative side of the line, then you're going to have a bad year. And you're probably going to have a second division ball club. And I don't know how fixable that is. If they were losing 11-6 every night, I'd be much more worried. I would tell you this is a problem. I would come on here today and say, that is not fixable. Now, the young player's not producing. You at least stay in the ballgame. You might be able to bring in maybe a Tommy Pham comes up. Maybe Talkman gets healthy and comes in. Maybe you could bring some veterans in midseason to beef up the component around the offense. There's some things you might be able to do. But sustainably, from a long-term perspective, it's all sorts of bad. Now, I know you're disappointed, but I think the disappointment has hit misery. Look, Frank the Tank and how he acts at the games, I got to tell you, I've tuned the guy out. He came on my show 4 years ago, and look, Barstool and Frank, wildly successful, have way more followers than me, way more. I mean, it's a job for Frank. This is not a job for me. This is part of my day. This is an important part of my day, and I take it seriously, and I treat it like professional, but I ain't paying my mortgage with what's going on here. But Frank was one of the worst segments I've ever had on this show when he came on. I don't know what his problem was, but he was. I had to drag it out of him. If Frank's not performing, Frank's not happy. And I think that if that's the model of what Mets fans want to be, winning or misery to that level, I think you should go do something else. I also think, and I've heard, and I don't know how true it is, that you know, you've heard it through the league, and I know that I have a friend, a buddy that does some work down there for the Braves down in Atlanta, so I know this is true. They absolutely, the fans down there, between the goofiness of Sal Licata, between Frank the Tank, they use that, and the players use that as ammunition. I mean, these are bad mascots to have. These are bad foam finger fans to have on your ledger. You know, I know Spike Lee's a clown, and Tracy Morgan is, you know, a figurehead over there, and Ben Stiller over there at the Garden, but at least I'll take Spike Lee and his buffoonery over what I see here on a Mets side. And I think it's bad, and I think there is a component of the players that if you have the bounce of the ball, do I really want to play for the second team in New York, a demanding fan base, a perpetually negative fan base, and a fan base that quite honestly, what you just said, James, quite honestly, unlike other arenas and ballparks where you go in, like Yankee Stadium, and no matter how bad things are, those fans are always pushing. And I don't want to hear about the history. Yeah, they grew up in 96 and they saw success. It's been 17 years since that team saw success. And there are 22-year-olds that don't remember a Yankees World Series. Trust me, they don't. They saw them make the World Series. You got to remember, the last World Series they had was 2009. Yeah, they went in 2024. But there are 22-year-olds that don't remember a Yankees championship. So it's the same thing. Now, yeah, there might be some 30-year-olds there, but not everybody who's in that, and that's a piece of the fan base, not the whole fan base. You go into these good arenas, the fans are making it a 10th person. That's not the case at Citi Field. In the playoffs, they've been great. But even in the playoffs, there's been this sitting on your hands, like, you know, I had the criticism I had during the San Diego series, you know, praying. I hate that. Don't pray to God for that. Don't pray to whatever you worship for that. He's not involved in that. Watch the game, provide energy, get involved. Make it a tough environment for the opposition. To the 2024, they did it. But you wonder, you know, how this fan base likes to sit around and say, well, make me happy. Well, you take a part in that. Now, yeah, it's not your fault that they, had like a 4 or 5 pitch ninth inning and had bad at bats. I'm not saying that. But did anybody in Oakland, the pitcher, feel any stress from that family? You sat on your hands the whole game. You sat on the hands the whole game. So to me, if you're at this point where it's frustration, maybe time to walk away for a little bit. I think there's a chunk of the fan base that needs to get out of this thing, at least temporarily. Just don't watch. Probably the best thing to go on the West Coast is 10 o'clock start. Don't watch. Check in June. Check in when things get better. And you want to call me a shill or call me something of an anatomy. I don't care, guys. Like, I see the comments. I don't care. I don't care. You know what? That reaction tells me I hit a nerve. I don't think that this fan base, and I do question, is it a fan base that is put together enough from all corners that gives the Mets a chance to win? Does it give them a chance to recruit? I mean, Soto was already in New York. I mean, you got to think twice. And yeah, the Dodgers are winning and it's LA and all that, but it's a better fan base. It's a better fan base even before they started this run. I mean, look at the Dodgers, the fans. I don't remember them, and I wasn't out there, but I don't remember a negative atmosphere when they got beat by the Mets in 2015. They didn't, you know, it was 5 years into the big money equity, the Guggenheim group. You know, they didn't get to the World Series till 2017. They didn't win one. They had the fake one in 2020. They didn't win one until 2024. I mean, it was a long time. Now they had success. They made the postseason, and maybe the, you know, the Mets are third year here in Stearns, and they're 1-1. In terms of making the postseason, but, you know, come on. So, you know, that's kind of part of that whole thing. You disagree with me? Fine. Jason writes, boring. To be honest, the roster's becoming a drag to follow. Half the players don't even feel like Mets, and most of them just aren't interesting to watch. It's reached a point where tuning in feels like a chore. Hearing Steve Gels recap the Dodgers this season was a total gut punch. They're the team we were trying to emulate, yet we seem to fail at it over and over again. It's scary to imagine where this franchise would be right now if Soto had taken the Yankees' offer. Since 2016, it feels like the organization has tried to be a playoff contender, but fails in the same way every year, with 2022 being the only truly dominant exception. There seems to be a deep organizational failure here. Even looking at our top prospects like Carson Bench, it's hard not to feel discouraged about the future. I understand your frustration with the fan base, but at this point, I can't even blame them for being upset. I didn't say that I shouldn't blame them for being upset. I think that if you're going to make it your point, Jason, to go to the ballpark and be angry and just rant online and wait for everything. I mean, you know, if Joe Benigno is your poster child for Mets fandom, time to do something else. Time to do something else. That's a guy that you shouldn't emulate on anything. He was a lousy radio host who was right place, right time, complained for all his career at the end about how he wanted to retire. Now he retires. Now he's on the air in his basement doing the same thing that I'm doing. Okay, getting spots on 770 with Sid Rosenberg to talk about sports to the mass audience that's not educated about sports. I mean, if you want to retire, retire. If your whole shtick is being negative and woe is me, to me, that is a pretty pathetic shtick. Unfortunately, it sells. And it sells more than what I do, but unfortunately it sells. I understand, Jason, the roster. You don't feel connected to Simeon. You don't feel connected to Polanco. The young players aren't doing it for you. Here's one thing that I do wonder, and we'll talk about it more with Dave in the second part two of the show. I wonder if A.J. Ewing could be, and I know he's still in AA and it's early, but I wonder if he could be an igniter. Because he seems to be that kind of player that could be an igniter. So we'll see. Sean writes, Lindor, sigh. Hey, Mike. It seems like the entirety of the Mets fandom is discussing this right now, and there's a reason. Lindor isn't himself until the weather gets warmer. It happens every year that he's been here. He clearly makes up for it later in the season and puts on a shocking display of success that is amazing considering his cold weather play. I know there's always a lot of factors, but at this point I've settled in that Lindor isn't going to produce like we want until June. Anything before that is a bonus. The real question is it even possible to build a team that plays well in the cold? I feel like we hear it every year about how the ball isn't flying and the weather and yada yada in April, September. Well, the other teams are winning these games. Why is it the other teams perform just fine and it's consistent in the Mets that can't adapt to their own cold climate? Maybe we should start having spring training in Syracuse. Sean, that's interesting. I think it goes back to what I said earlier, Sean. I think it's the energy in the stadium. I know you guys don't like hearing about energy and you think it's woo-woo. energy. Why do you think NBA teams play well at home? Same basket, same ball, same rules. Why? It's the energy. It's the environment. It's the crowd. It's the between the ears part that it's hard always to quantify. Now, baseball doesn't have that same level, but some of the best Mets teams that we love, like the late Bobby Valentine Mets teams, were really good at home. Really good at home. And I think part of that was, I have to tell you, I don't remember these kind of negative sequences at Shea Stadium. Things have changed a lot with the Mets fan base over the last 20 years. 06 was that demarcation line. Their hearts were broken in 06, and this fan base has not forgotten it, has not forgiven it. And I thought Lindor put it aside in 2024, and I'm not convinced that it's all the way back, but it's close. And maybe the only thing that's going to do it is a championship. And every Mets team is going to have to battle its own. If every Mets team has to battle its own fan base, I mean, it is what it is. But it's going to make things a lot harder. I mean, Sean, that's my thing. I don't know if it's the weather. I mean, you got to play in the elements. And the Caribbean guys, I mean, they act like they're on the North Pole when they're out there. And I know it's uncomfortable and cold. Honestly, it's not as cold in September as it used to be. The weather patterns have changed. April always was cold, dating back to when I started watching baseball. But I think it's the environment. I think the Met fan sits on its hands. I think there's a toxic portion of the fan base. I think Frank the Tank is the poster child. I hate to give him more air. And I think that he's setting a tone. And he's a bad, bad, bad role model for young fans who are going to be watching him on, like, TikTok and everything. Nothing good. And all it is a business model to help Barstool stay relevant. It's a shame. I mean, anybody who's been in any kind of business knows intelligent debate, intelligent books, intelligent anything does not sell as well as sugar rush, banal, TikTokization, I would say, of any topic. I'm a perfect example of it. I wish I could be more mainstream. My style's not going to sell because it's too, I think it's too intellectual and rational. It sells better than you think, but it's never going to be like Frank ranting behind home plate at Citi Field is always going to get tons more hits than anything I do. So anyway, Steve writes, "Hi, Mike. I'm writing because things are looking pretty bad right now. I know it's still early in the season, but does this team actually look good to you? Truthfully, how many good hitters do they even have? It seems like the roster is just full of high-paying, washed-up players. To make matters worse, we are currently in the easy part of the schedule. I don't actually agree with that. And it's still not good enough. I'm tired of seeing this. We are in year 6 of Cohen's ownership and year 3 with Stearns. We have to have a better team than this. It makes me wonder if it was actually Matt Arnold doing the magic with the Brewers and not Stearns. Even with our talent, if I didn't know Benj was a top prospect, I would have thought he was a fringe prospect based on what we're seeing. You cut Rico Garcia, but sure, let's keep Luis Garcia. Well, they got rid of him too. Lindor playing this badly out of the gate every year gets old real quick. Change your offseason program already. Pedro Martinez says the team has too many egos. What's up with Beltran's number retirement being pushed to September? Takes the juice out of it. Oh, well, I'm just tired of the same song and dance of the team struggle almost every year when they're supposed to compete. Does the team look really good to me now? No. I think, like I said during the front half of the show, I think the pitching is actually quite a positive thing. If you pitch, you're going to be in ball games. I got to think they could figure out the offense. And I'm not in the camp yet to say that all the young players, every one of them is not going to play well. I mean, Beatty at least, again, I saw something from Beatty in the second half last year. Alvarez has gotten off to a decent start offensively. Vientos has always been the one I'm unsure of, and Mauricio. Those two have always been unsure that they're actually good players. But, you know, I think that to say wash, the only guy that you have to be a little bit concerned about is Simeon because he had it the broken leg. What is it, the Liz Frank injury that we call? And maybe that's part of it. You don't know any lower half injury. He hit the ball better. And a veteran like that, if you look at Simeon's numbers from last year, he's going to have a couple of really good months with the bat, and the rest are going to be eh. And I think he's there for his glove. He's not a core offensive player. So I'm not so sure. I understand that you hate it. I'm not so sure, Steve, that I'm ready to say that. As far as the Matt Arnold Stearns got into that organization early in the ballgame. I don't know if Matt Arnold was influential throughout maybe the last few years. I hate the Rico Garcia shuttling. I know everybody's getting crazy about the guy they traded for Cedric Mullins out there. Was it Munoz? I'm trying to see. I mean, Rico Garcia right now hasn't given up a run. He was pretty good last year. I hate the shuttling of bullpen arms, and that's how you lost Rico Garcia. Problem is, at some point, something's got to give. If you're only going to go 5 or 6 innings and you're only going to go 90 to 100 pitches on the starters, unless you have a rubber arm reliever that you're willing to throw out there 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5 days of the week, which nobody's built that way anymore. And truthfully, with the way that they throw and the amount of torque on their arms and the all-out nature of pitching in 2026, you're going to blow that guy's arm out in a month. Look at how the burnout of the bullpen happened last year. What's going to happen is the Mets are going to lose a good arm. Is that Garcia? Probably at one. Who knows with Joey Gerber here? Guys are going to get put on waivers, get picked up, and you're going to say, I wish I had that guy. The odds are they're not. I mean, look at Pittsburgh. Dennis Santana, the Mets had him. So did the Yankees. They didn't hold on to him. I mean, that when you're in the, you got at some point, those guys that are on that shuttle, you got to take them off the shuttle if you think they have talent. But if they don't have options, that's why I think it would be nice to have a taxi squad. It'll probably cost the owners a little bit more money. But if you had a taxi squad where you could hold these guys, it might help out a little bit. I've talked about that. But yeah, look, I understand your feelings. I understand your feelings on everything. As far as Beltran in September, I'm not crazy about that. I like those to be in the summer. I like those to be a little bit earlier. But I'm thinking that if he's getting inducted to the Hall of Fame in July, he probably wants to focus on that, get inducted, and then they figure they do something. And it might be a way to attract fans to the ballpark once football season starts. That might be a marketing hedge in case things go bad to get a gate out of a situation. But don't want to think that way here on April 12th. It's not even tax day yet, and everybody's panicking. It's really... Ben writes, observations. I believe Tobias Myers would make the rotation better than David Peterson. I've never been a big Peterson guy. His stuff never graded out well, and I believe Myers offers more upside. Between Myers, Scott, and Tong, Weniger, Peterson's leash should be short. Regardless, it's unlikely they re-sign Peterson once he's a free agent. I agree with everything there, Ben, except I don't think Myers could go through the lineup twice. I think he's a 30-pitch guy, maybe 30 to 40. Manaea, from an outcome standpoint, hasn't been bad, but even yesterday, once he hits 50 pitches, he's talking about his Arizona game. You're seeing 87-mile-an-hour fastballs. He's a 3-inning guy at most. He can't be a regular starter at this point. Agree with that. I think Manaea is going to be... Maybe he's that guy that, out of 5 days, you could pitch him twice, multiple innings, to save some of the A bullets in that pen. Because Rayleigh, your A pen of Brazenbaum, Rayleigh, Weaver, Devin Williams, and I wonder if Brazenbaum eventually moves ahead of Weaver. That's, you know, you got to protect that. Position-wise, I like what I've seen from Jared Young. He can be effective against righties. I wouldn't want him facing a lefty, but against righties, he should be getting more playing time. Sounds like that happened, at least while Soto is out. And I wouldn't be surprised if he starts getting more at-bats playing every day. Ben at first base with both Beatty and Vientos struggling. Beatty and Vientos haven't earned everyday playing time against righties over him, especially Vientos is not as effective against righties. I don't completely buy his hot stretch. A lot of his hits are on the ground and not on top of, not a ton of pop. I agree with that, Ben. I think Vientos is who he is. He's okay. I prefer Young over him against righties. I actually don't disagree with that. Look, Young has an 800 OPS in the minors. At some point, look, I just talked about Max Muncy and the Dodgers. Scrap heap guys, sometimes they pop out. Look at Carlos Cortez over there in Oakland. Beatty is very disappointing so far. No home runs or walks this year and a lot of ground balls. Need more in year 5 for him. Totally agree. Benj, unfortunately, looks overwhelmed, even more so than Rosario and Smith in their first days of the big leagues. I believe Benj will be a better hitter than these two. Just saying, though, the first 12 games have been very hard for Benj. No pop, fouling back middle pitches, off balance, having trouble velo, and breaking stuff. For a top 20 prospect, I thought he would be more competitive with his at-bats. I'll give him till May. I think it's reasonable to want and expect more. Agree with that. Give him till May 1st. I've liked Luis Robert at bats, though he's overly passive at times, but his defense has felt more average than a plus defender. That was, again, Dave, when he comes on. Dave Mills, our friend, our contributor, he told me all offseason that he felt that Robert's defense was a little overrated. Tyrone Taylor clearly is better. So that, you know, that's some some early. And then let's go to the chat. I got a couple more here. I don't want to wrap up just yet. John writes in the chat, I think the struggles are beyond the fan reaction. There seems to be a warning signs for some of these players' performance. I'm not saying to excuse fan behavior, but I think right now there's bigger fish to fry. Yeah, I mean, look, it was not the main point of my show. Main point of my show goes back is, I think the last comment from Ben put it out best. I mean, the fact that Jared Young, a 4A guy who maybe he's finally putting it together, is actually pushing Vientos and Beatty for time, and we're having that conversation. Not good for those two guys. Not good for guys who are top prospects. More so Beatty than Vientos. Vientos has always been a lukewarm prospect in the Mets organization from day one. Gary writes, all new coaches, same results. Hey, I had this conversation. You know, my dad was texting me, bitch, you know, complaining about the hitting coach. It's not a video game with a joystick. They're resources. It's possible that these hitting coaches connect better with some of the young players. So far, it's Alvarez seems to be doing better. The other guy's not. Too soon to tell. Coaches are very overrated. Very overrated in baseball. It's a front office sport more than anything about building a team. I think the coaches are there, a support system. They're a resource, but they're not the end-all, be-all. Lewis wrote, this is what, quote-unquote, do something results in. So I always write, for those who don't know what that means, and thank you for writing in, Lewis. I always say, you know, the do something, anything crowd, that gets you in trouble. I'm not so sure that that's what Stearns did. I think Stearns looked at the long range and the short range. The only move that I think puts them in a bit of a predicament, and I think Beatty was why they did it, was if you look at McNeil, if McNeil could be that kind of hitter that you saw this weekend at Citi Field and frankly the whole week in New York, you could have used them as a hedge to bench. And you know, who knows? He probably would have been an okay first baseman, McNeil. That was originally a plan. He even said when they interviewed him on Friday that Stearns was talking about him being the outfield. They wanted to shed probably some salary, and they also probably wanted to maybe clean up the clubhouse. I mean, he said he and Lindor had a disagreement in Philly. I hope Lindor's not pushing people out. Who knows? But that, as far as Nimmo, I love Brandon Nimmo, but when you look at the construction of the outfield, Soto and left is a better situation. The contract and Nimmo being a DH would have clogged that thing up. You really have to look at it from a standpoint of investment and team building. Having Soto, Nimmo, Pete would have been tough. At some point, you would have had to figure out a way to put them on the field. So that's, I don't think this was a do something, anything situation, Lewis. You know, that's pretty much it. I'm trying to see if there's anything else here on X since we got on the air. You know, everything I read here is just, you know, nonsense, you know, so, yeah, just nonsense. So, anyway, so that's it. So we're going to wrap up here the part one of, our show today. So part two, and if you're listening, it should come out in a couple hours. Part two is going to be me and our good friend, David Mills, Talking Mets contributor. We're going to be going through, and if you haven't subscribed, it's actually up there free of charge for everybody to read, the 2026 early season Mets top positional prospects. Dave puts it out there. It's one of those free pieces that I put out there to, you know, obviously encourage you to subscribe for the premium content and get some of the ancillary hits during the week, which I think have been going over well. And we'll be talking over the second hour of the show about the Mets positional prospects, which I got to be honest with you, there's some questions. It wasn't as clear cut as the pitching was. So, you know, we'll be doing that. Is there reason to get excited about? Is there anybody other than AJ Ewing that can maybe help the Mets this year? Is a possibility that they may need some offensive help internally this year. So is Nick Morabito a guy that could help? Is AJ Ewing, you know, can they incorporate maybe some of the youthful speed and energy and enthusiasm that a lot of the fans think right now is missing? So let's take a quick break. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed part one of today's show. We'll be back. Me and David Mills, part two shortly, talking about the Mets, Talking Mets top positional prospects, early season top positional prospects. We'll be back with more right after this.